Have you noticed in your own, you know, your own business building and your own ability, like ways that you can protect yourself, protect your inner peace with this method of community?
Yes. I love everything that you're saying. And the flip side is that then we also feel like we can be too much, right? And mm-hmm. so it's like, oh my God, I did it. You know, I hit that 6-figure milestone. Oh my God, I'm running a 7-figure business. I'm getting accolades. I'm getting noticed. And all of a sudden it's like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wait, what? So all of the stuff that I went through to become a success, now people perceive me as being too much. So mm-hmm. I feel like the trick is to like too much and not enough. They're two sides of the exact same coin. It's this failure or perceived failure to meet somebody else's expectations of who we are. So the trick is to be able to stop listening to the expectations others have of us and tune into those expectations that we have of ourselves.
Welcome to She Empowers the Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Kayla Lucas. I'm a mom of two, a family-focused chiropractor, a trailblazing entrepreneur, and a holistic mindset queen. I am on a mission to empower women to lead themselves and their families to greater health and wellness in their personal lives and businesses. Each week, I'm sharing inspiring content that will give you the tools to navigate your own wellness journey, grow your businesses, expand your mind, and take care of the ones you love. This is your space to feel supported, inspired, and empowered. Let's get into it.
Hello, beautiful. Welcome back to She Empowers the Podcast. I am so stoked to be bringing you another guest today, but this guest is like packs a punch. We have Lise Wilcox with us. I found her on Instagram. I've been immediately drawn to her. She is a speaker. She's a performance coach. She's a twice best-selling author, an emotional intelligence expert, a woman who really is speaking on about leadership, emotional intelligence, putting people first. I love her message. I love the way she shows up on her platforms. She's also a mom. So that also comes with some level of intensity when you're a business owner. But overall, I'm just really excited to interview her. So welcome, Lise, to She Empowers the Podcast.
Thank you so much. And that is such an introduction. I will take it. I love it. Thank you.
Of course. So I know that we're going to be talking about a lot of different things here in terms of, you know, leadership and some of the things that you really feel super called to speak about in terms of women. But I really want you to just share with us who you are, if people have not found you yet, you know, how you got to where you are today and why you feel so passionate about sharing on leadership and emotional intelligence.
For me, I think the biggest thing is that none of us really ever feel like we truly belong. And everybody struggles with some degree of not feeling good enough. And I have seen this over and over again for almost 10 years in my career. People, even at the top of their game, still struggle with that feeling of belonging and that feeling of like, uh-oh, like, what if I'm just not enough? And mm-hmm. so for me, that's so passion driven because of my own past history. There are like chapters and chapters of trauma involved between parents, childhood, divorce, and then really kind of stepping into this reclaiming of myself while also being a longtime single mom of three, navigating breast cancer at the same time. It just hits differently when you are responsible for other people and for kind of breaking that cycle to show somebody how to do it differently. And it's so passionate for me that when I get to work with people and watch them step into their own reclamation of self and truly like get clear on their blind spots, overcome their self-sabotage and step into that position of truly owning who they are and what enough feels like for them, it's just endlessly satisfying.
You know, I feel like so many people who have like major trauma or major setback or challenge in their life are the ones who kind of come up to the surface, almost like you said, that reclamation, but like just like torch in hand, holding it up. Like, I belong here. I deserve to be here. And I'm going to show the fucking world why. Mm-hmm. So I love that energy. I receive that. I'm super excited for you to just sort of share your presence and essence with us today. I know I didn't, you know, I sent you some questions prior to the interview just to kind of for us to kind of get our juices flowing. But one question that I want to know so deeply is, how do you define success for yourself?
Success for me is the ability to be a full-time mom and a full-time business owner. So freedom is a huge core value of mine. The ability to work from home, have an international coaching and speaking practice, and also have the ability to be at like every single one of my daughter's dance competitions, or make sure I know when the field trips are happening, making dinner at home every night, or at least ordering in some of those nights. It's just so important to me that I'm a mom first, and that I'm able to run a business that supports all of those different nuances that come with being a mom. Sometimes that it's not a perfect balance. It's definitely a rhythm and a flow that we find. But yeah, for me, success is being able to be paid really well for what I do while also being a mom first and run the business alongside that.
Mm-hmm. I like how you use the words rhythm and flow, because balance just doesn't actually seem like it's a good word to describe mompreneurship. It really feels like it's a high level of achievement that none of us can actually achieve. And it just puts language to the normalcy of being a mom and a business owner. So how does one become a speaker? What methods have you used to build your own success being a single parent who is running a multi-level business?
When I was at Queen's University, I was like, 20 years old, and I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do with my life. So went to the guidance counselor. They put me through a bunch of tests, and they were like, okay, the answer is really clear. You either need to be a police officer, a stand-up comedian, or a keynote speaker. And I was like, love true crime, terrified of the dark, do not think that police work is for me. Think I'm really funny, laugh at all my own jokes, but that does not guarantee a successful career in stand-up comedy. And I'm 20 years old. What the hell am I going to talk about? And I walked away feeling like super disenchanted. And then, you know, you fast forward 20 years, and I'd been through, you know, I had been a stay-at-home mom, and then all of a sudden overnight had to reinvent myself with divorce thrown in there. Totally traumatic situation. But then all of a sudden, you know, I've started a business, grew it to be international, multi-six figures, overcame breast cancer, did all these things. And it was like, oh, now I know what I'm going to talk about. And so for me, speaking has always been really natural. And I think it was just, there was just the gap in the timing for me to become wise and mature enough to get all of that content under my belt, that I could actually go and speak to other professionals about resilience and confidence and lessons in leadership that are kind of waiting right there for us to choose, as opposed to try to struggle along with them.
Have you had a lot of like business coaches along this journey?
I have. Some good, some terrible. Yeah. Just recently I'm working with a positioning coach who is excellent. And yeah, so I've had kind of a mixed bag along the way. Have definitely learned lessons for better or for worse in the people that I've had, quote unquote, in my corner.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you're doing a really good job at creating coaching from the perspective and the business model of getting results by putting people first. And I really want to ask you, like, what does that mean exactly? And how can women work this in today's model of leadership?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I think that, so at a corporate level, and when we're working with teams, everybody is watching AI just grow exponentially, and people are freaking out, who's going to lose jobs? Like, what does this all mean? Right. For teams and leadership in a corporate environment, emotional intelligence is the skill that people are going to need, because you need to have that relational intelligence and being able to understand how people work, because AI is going to take care of literally everything else, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we understand that? I just met somebody who's the HR director at Metrolinx in Ontario. And as a part of their inclusion initiatives, they started turning down the heat just a couple of degrees to accommodate all the menopausal women in the office. So it's like having those micro changes that see your employees as people, not employees, like understanding through this trauma-informed lens that people are coming in with all kinds of baggage. And how do we treat them as people first, employees second, right? At the entrepreneurship level, you can wear all the hats and you can do all the roles. You can be all the things to all the people and like overfunction with the best of them. At the end of the day, you are a person who's wearing all of those hats. So how do you understand you, your identity, your purpose, your wants, desires, what you like to do for fun? How do you understand that that is you as a fundamental core of a person versus associating your identity with like, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner, I'm a wife, I'm a whatever, whatever. Who are you, the person? And how do we really get clear on what feels good in this life for you, that person, not you, the one who's playing all the roles?
I think that leadership really today, female led leadership, is, I don't want to say hard to find, but the relatability of it. When I see a woman leading a team who is also a mom, I feel this different level of relatability. But I love what you said about the emotional intelligent leadership. Can you unpack that a little bit more for listeners? Like, what does that mean? What does that look like day to day? How can we cultivate that in our relationships and the people that we're serving?
So if you think of like a stereotypical boss trope that we have. First of all, it's going to be an older white guy that comes to mind for most people because of, you know, thanks patriarchy. And it's like, you know, this was due yesterday. It's like this bro culture that hustling and pressure and demanding and grinding, that's what's going to get results, right? We're going to drive home results by really turning up the heat in the kitchen. In reality, that works for a very small percentage of people for a very small percentage of time. Otherwise, you're heading into burnout and people hate their lives and like it leads to all kinds of other stuff I'm sure you see in your practice all of the time, right? So having emotionally intelligent leadership is really being able to understand how do we choose to have understated confidence? Like, how do we really be confident, not by being assertive and aggressive, but by being clear, kind, communicative? How do we take the rules and the structure and use that as a backbone, knowing that a backbone is also designed to be flexible and that there can't necessarily be absolutes because people still have struggled at home when, you know, their 13-year-old is a kid one day and the next day gets caught smoking weed. That weighs on you when you're showing up to work, or, you know, you're just living a life, you're doing your job, whatever it is. And then you find out that your father has dementia. That weighs on you. We are not one constant state all the time. So emotionally intelligent leadership understands that this singular person is a multitude of roles who's constantly in flux, and they can appreciate that there's, you know, I had a client who was going through just extreme trauma, but was such an overfunctioner that she, when she was working at her pharmaceutical company, she just carried on, right? And then if she did miss a deadline, which was incredibly rare, or if she was a little, let's say, aggressive in her communication, she would get put on a performance improvement plan versus saying, hey, this is really out of character for you. Is everything okay? You know, one's an example of this old, outdated kind of toxic style of leadership. And the other is an example of really putting people first and understanding that we are dynamic, we are in flux, we are in flow. And if you really want to succeed in the workplace, you have to be able to put those emotional needs first so that you allow and empower people to do their absolute best work.
Hey friends, what's up? As many of you may know, my family and I recently sold our home and bought our forever home, and now here we are. But it was a 3-year decision that took so much time and energy. When we finally decided to move, I was not looking forward to walking through the process of selling our home, buying another one, but none of it would have been possible without my beautiful friend, Trish. Trish Regeer is a Saskatoon realtor who prides herself in being your one-stop shop for both buying and selling. She is super passionate about helping her clients find their forever home, and it honestly shows up when you meet her. Her mission is to cultivate lasting relationships built on trust and integrity while empowering her clients to make informed decisions that benefit themselves and their families. When I say this process took 3 years, it literally took that long. She took us through so many different homes, looking at different build options, but when we finally settled on our most beautiful current home, she was great to have in our corner during the negotiation process. Trish is fun, energetic, and makes the buying and selling process so smooth from start to finish. She ensured that we were happy with all the moving parts and was an excellent communicator through the whole process. Whether you're buying your first home, upgrading to accommodate a growing family, or purchasing a revenue property, you can rely on Trish for attention to detail and caring nature. Trish finds the best individual approach and plan for her clients, including extensive and personalized market strategies. And as we know, this is more important now more than ever. Trish is licensed in residential, and she has built solid relationships in her industry, so you can dial up the best lawyers, appraisers, mortgage brokers, contractors, pretty much whatever you need, she can get it for you. If you want a driven, hardworking, and trustworthy agent who will go above and beyond for you, this is a no-brainer, my friends. Get in touch with Trish. You can connect with her at Coldwell Banker Signature in Saskatoon or on socials at Trish Regier. That's at T-R-I-S-H-R-E-G-I-E-R or online at www.306realty.com. And don't worry, we will link all of her stuff in the show notes in case you're driving and you can't click right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the old patriarchy, the old, I guess, structure feels very robotic, where I feel like the more women are stepping into that female-led leadership, the more humanness we're bringing to it. And I know we've all heard the concept of like, leave emotions out of business, don't make emotional decisions, you know, but actually, I think that emotionally aware leaders, emotionally intelligent people are able to see things that might go unseen, unheard, unspoken. And then that actually translates into people feeling seen, heard, appreciated, supported, and loved, where they start to feel a sense of deep roots into the company or the vision or the mission that they're working for and within.
100% agree. Then you actually create investment and buy-in. And so it's like by being able to lead with emotional intelligence, you're creating emotional safety. And when people feel emotionally safe, that's when we calm the nervous system, we drop back into our rational brain, and we're actually able to make really good decisions. When we try to suppress emotion and just function on autopilot or function within these really, really strict boundaries or guidelines, it tends to have the opposite effect because people feel like they're so under pressure and they have to so compartmentalize that they're not able to feel that sense of safety. And then and they get so triggered into fight, flight, freeze and fawn, they actually can't deliver in the way we expect them to.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like the nervous system is obviously something that I love talking about and I love learning about, but it's so interesting how you can recognize human behavior from a neurological perspective and where somebody's at. In my practice, we call it neck down dead. It's like people are walking around like zombies. They're on autopilot. They're going to work. They're going through the motions. They're presenting themselves to their day-to-day activities and demands, but they're not actually aware of their body. They're not aware of themselves. And it's not necessarily their fault. It's just, we have breeded a culture upon which we glorify the hustle. We congratulate the accomplishments and the accolades and all of the things. And of course, those things are beautiful to have and beautiful to attain, but did you attain them under such immense stress that now your nervous system just can't actually function or appreciate the celebration of that, right? So I think I really am picking up what you're putting down. I want to ask too, you know, for people who are business owners or who are working in environments that either are supportive or non-supportive, how does a person become a bit more emotionally intelligent?
Amazing question. I've written a lot about this on LinkedIn too. It's self-awareness. So when we can lead, when we really understand who we are, what activates us, what triggers us, what makes us really happy, what makes us feel totally unseen, and what like activates that like rage or frustration or sense of rejection, whatever it is. And we understand what brings us joy, how we behave in stress. We understand how important it is for us to rest and have fun and play. We change who we are by changing our outlook on the world. So it's imagine like, remember the little viewfinders, the Viewmaster toys we had as kids?
Yes.
If you keep looking at the Muppets, at that one lens you have of the Muppets, doesn't matter how many times you click the thing on the side or how fast you click it, you're going to be looking at the same thing. Mm-hmm. Our job is to remove that lens, put in a brand new lens, change your perspective, how you see yourself. That changes how you see the world. So the first step is really becoming self-educated and like educated in who you are and becoming really aware of what makes you tick.
I think that's such an important concept too. And I like how you said a different lens because a lot of this stuff takes reprogramming. What I've really noticed in running my own business is like, there's so much programming that's in the background, almost like, you know, white noise, but it's still there. And you kind of have to go deep within yourself to find your triggers or your self-limiting beliefs or the ways in which you think or speak and how that actually translates into how you treat yourself, but actually how you treat others as well. So I love that self-awareness is such a huge component. You know, what are some very common leadership challenges that women face, and in your experience and how you coach your clients, but also in many of your speaking gigs, like how do you teach people how to overcome these challenges, especially as women?
A big one is having the sense of enoughness. You know, I tell a story about how for much of my life, and I know for sure for many of my clients' lives, you spend your life feeling like you're living the live action version of Goldilocks, that you're constantly going from not enough to then becoming labeled as being too much, just searching for just enough or just right. So I think that's a big one, really being able to define what enough feels like. So many people deal with imposter syndrome, and no matter how accomplished they are, they feel like somebody's going to find out, or I really don't belong here, I don't deserve to be here. Sometimes that is cultural and systemic. Like, this is a system that was literally not created for women, and we've been working to change that for so many years. And some of it is, for me, it's an integrity move. You know, if you, as a business owner, for example, if you stop caring about what you're doing or what you're delivering, and you stop questioning, like, am I in integrity? Am I doing what I'm saying I'm supposed to be doing? I think you should stop running your business. So sometimes I think that imposter syndrome that we all deal with can actually be a really valuable tool when it's keeping us in check and making sure, like, you know, I'm going to charge this much, I say I'm going to deliver this result. Am I doing those things, or am I not delivering what I'm saying I'm going to be doing? Mm-hmm. So imposter syndrome, and I think, goes hand in hand with confidence. Nobody is born confident. Like, nobody is born confident. Mm-hmm. It's a choice that you make, and it's contextual. So you can be really confident in one aspect of your life and feel like you're completely dropping the ball in another. It's like this muscle that you have to flex by continuously choosing to be confident. So I would say, you know, top three struggles are feeling not enough, or a sense of I don't belong, this double-edged sword of imposter syndrome, and really lacking in the confidence department, or feeling like you have to overprove, overcompensate it to somebody.
I mean, I've personally struggled with all of those. I think some of those are kind of still ongoing.
It's because we're people and we're constantly, like, there is no end point, right? And I feel like I just have to interject that, because we get so conditioned to think like, all I have to do is this and I'll never feel like this again.
I think the way that I think about it too, Lise, is that you can be really confident and you can build success on confidence. Mm-hmm. But if you have deep seated unworthiness, which is our birthright, that shit will seep into pretty much every aspect of your life.
Yes. I could not agree more.
And I think just in that, you know, you've talked a lot on your social platforms, and I know this to be true too, as a chiropractor, is like, we're wired to find the problem.
Yes.
Can you speak to that? I want you to unpack that with our audience, because it's so good.
Yeah, thank you. And it's biological. Like, if you think, not that either of us were there, but imagine going back to what we learned in school and stories that we've heard. Imagine like flashing back to the past, back to like tribal pack living. If you belong with your little society, you live, because everybody's working together. There are people who are responsible for, you know, bringing in food, for shelter, for clothing, for protection. You're watching out for each other. And if you belong to that group, you live. If for some reason you get ousted from that group, you're dead. Mm-hmm. Period. Because now you have no group of people to protect you and help provide for you in this unbelievably barren land, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As people, like, as humans, we evolve at this glacially slow pace. So although our software has changed around us, like our software has evolved, our hardware really hasn't changed all that much. Though we are wired to belong to the group, because that's when our nervous system and unconscious believes that we are safe. So if we feel threatened by an absence of belonging, we literally feel like we're about to die. And that's why this fear of rejection for so many of us is palpable. You know, people who hate public speaking, or people who are terrified to give presentations, is a great example. It's because, like, if you mess up on stage, literally nothing is going to happen to you. But at a physiological level, it's like, mayday, mayday, you're going to be rejected. Nobody wants to be with you. And all of a sudden it feels like you perceive it as death. Mm-hmm. That was already an issue when we lived in like little groups of people. But now we live in places where our family is not even close by. Like our family, they're miles away. And we have access to literal billions of other people just by picking up our phone and scrolling. So now the group that we feel compelled to belong to at a physiological level is gargantuan. Mm-hmm. So we are bombarded with opportunities to prove to ourselves that we don't fit in, that we don't belong, that we're going to be rejected from the group, right? It's like we are setting ourselves up to fail because we're working against our own biology.
Like, how does that translate? Cause it makes so much sense. And we kind of, I think, all suffer from comparisonitis, right? We see things online, we hear things, we're perceiving our environment of like, am I leveling up? Am I good enough? Yeah. Especially as women, you know, I personally feel that way. I can't speak for every woman, but I do genuinely know that there's this sense of, am I getting there? Is this enough? Right. And we also live in a very consumer driven culture where we see people online that are sharing the best, you know, decor and the best outfits and all of the best places they're going as this highlight reel. So is this, I know we both use this method and this portal as a tool, but have you noticed in your own, you know, your own business building and your own ability, like ways that you can protect yourself? Protect your inner peace with this method of community?
Yes. I love everything that you're saying. And the flip side is that then we also feel like we can be too much, right? And so it's like, oh my God, I did it. You know, I hit that six-figure milestone. I hit multiple six. Oh my God, I'm running a seven-figure business. I'm getting accolades. I'm getting noticed. And all of a sudden it's like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wait, what? So all of the stuff that I went through to become a success, now people perceive me as being too much. So I feel like the trick is to like too much and not enough. They're two sides of the exact same coin. It's this failure or perceived failure to meet somebody else's expectations of who we are. So the trick is to be able to stop listening to the expectations others have of us and tune into those expectations that we have of ourselves. That is a practice. And for me personally, like it's such a practice, it's such a process because I constantly feel like, you know, I've been running this business for almost 10 years. There are moments when I cannot believe that I am not speaking to NFL teams. Like I cannot believe that I am not selling out stadiums. Then there are other moments where I'm like, bitch, you are not even 43 years old. Like, of course you're not doing that yet because you haven't had enough time. Like business is forged on relationships, connections, and time. That's, you can't shortcut that, right? And so it's that constant balance of being able to like be in your own drive and accomplish the goals and the live out the intentions that feel so valuable to you as a human, while also being able to temper your own expectations, be like, it takes time. You're raising a business and a family and a marriage and your personal health, making sure your kids aren't getting hooked on drugs, trying to catch up with like seven seasons of Billions. It's a lot that we're managing at any given time. And so it takes like such a, it's just such an inner cage fight of like, yeah, stay the course that you're on and also be super gentle with yourself for where you're at.
The grace. And yes, everything you said, I'm like, yep, that's me. I know it's many women. I know that we don't
speak
about it enough. We don't admit it enough. But why do we get into these cycles where it's like, I should be further ahead? I say that to myself. I'm like, I should be further ahead. Why am I not further ahead? And then you said on the flip side, you also recognize like, you are doing a good job. Like, you're holding so much for so many people. So why do you feel like you need to be like further ahead or more successful? Or because we see it, because we're seeing people in so many different portals in so many different areas of the world with so many different privileges, different backgrounds, different experiences, yeah. like different perspectives, that we then feel this sense of like, oh, maybe I'm not enough. Maybe I'm not there.
Every time I think of this, like one specific example comes to mind because absolutely, like you're 100% right. I went to school with a gal who's now like a communications director for a massive, massive global company. Okay. And I look at her career and I'm like, oh my God, like, how did you manage to achieve this? And then I remember that she came from a family of massive privilege who supported her financially at least till she was 30. And I'm talking about she took on several unpaid internships because her parents were paying all of her bills, vacations, cell phone bills, rent in Toronto. Like they paid for everything. So she had this afforded luxury mm-hmm. of doing all this unpaid grunt work that she could leverage her time to get up to the top, right? And I'm like, we each take our own path. We each take our own process. Some of us are plonked into the game at level one. Some of us are plonked into the game at level five. It doesn't matter. It's what are you doing for you that's mm-hmm. in integrity, that feels good, that feels aligned with your values and lets you to live a life and not just, you know, make a living or not just kind of follow somebody else's version of what your life should look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And I think the conversation kind of goes with that built. You can have the online community, right? We can yep. have conversations like this. I would never have met you unless I found you on Instagram. That's a
totally agree.
Thing. I'm super yeah. excited we're having this conversation, but yes. where is your inner community? Where is the people you can physically touch, you can physically hug, you can call upon, you can have in your corner to cheer you the F on, to yeah. pick you up when you fall on your face, to laugh with you, cry with you? I think that is one of the most important things for women to build in today's culture is an inner circle community. And obviously, yes, a social community as well.
Can I add on to that for a sec?
Yes.
I love this. And, you know, I live in a small town east of Toronto, and building community has been a real challenge. I had a huge community, thought they were my best friends, went through the process of divorce, and all of a sudden it was like leprosy. Like I had absolutely no people, and that was its own trauma. And so now I'm in this small town. I feel like I've met everybody. Like I don't have that community. And so for me, I started going to New York and I was like, this place is small. So I got to expand my horizons and I'm going to diligently spend at least once a quarter in New York City. And over the past little while, I've been able to cultivate like an IRL community. They don't live anywhere near me, but I'm still able to go even every three or four months and connect with those people. Mm-hmm. And so anybody listening, having this like absence of friendship or absence of community physically can also feel really activating when we're like, you need a community because you do. And if they're really hard to find where you are, like, please let this be an expander that you can take those people that you're meeting online and make them your in real life community. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have to think outside the box a little bit to connect with those people that really see you, really get you, and really encourage you, and vice versa, even if they don't live within the, I don't know, like 100-kilometer radius of where you are.
Well, I think too, it's just like we're creating a nest for our children in our homes. Mm-hmm. Where is your nest? If you do have to fly to your nest or drive to your nest, or whatever that is, absolutely.
I love that.
It's true. It's like, it's important for us to spread our own wings. And I think that sometimes, this is my perspective, is that if some people might not even think of that, at least mm-hmm. like they might just be like, well, I just live in a small town and everybody knows everybody and it kind of sucks. And like, well, what are you doing about it? Right. And yeah. so it is this concept of like, where are you spreading your wings? Where are you stepping yes. outside of your comfort zone? And how can you actually bring in more people into your vortex that are yes. like-minded, that maybe are doing similar things or not similar mm-hmm. things, but you just get a really good vibe from them and you freaking like being around them.
Yes,
like,
completely.
100%. Okay. I'm loving this conversation.
Me too. I wish you were closer.
Yeah. You'll fly to Toronto. I know you've talked so much on your social platforms, and what originally drew me to you was how you talk about self-sabotage and actually putting labels and language in the ways in which it can look like or appear in our lives. And I really wanted you to kind of unpack that in terms of, you know, why do we default to self-sabotaging behaviors inside of our dreams, our businesses, our relationships, and the things that we're doing in our lives?
I love this. So from where I stand, we have like four P's of self-sabotage: perfectionism, procrastination, people-pleasing, and performance anxiety. Okay. So pin that. I like to imagine and explain our brain as being this like freshly fallen sheet of snow. So from the time we're 0 to 6, it's like we're just running around in the backyard. We're not thinking about it. We're just like running around, making little footprints or leaving little footprints and pathways behind us. And then around age 6, 7, it's like there's this flash freeze. And all of a sudden, those pathways that we've created kind of get frozen into place. Now, we both know from Canadian winters, it is possible to make new pathways in the snow, but it's like real hard. You got to crunch through the ice. You might cut your leg. You get really sweaty. It's hot. It's uncomfortable. The brain does not like any of those things. The brain likes easy because easy feels good. So we are naturally designed to follow that path of least resistance and keep doing things the way we've always done them. So let's say you're doing things the way you've always done them, and it keeps taking you to like the compost pile in your backyard. You're like, oh, for the love of God, like, I do not want to go to this garbage dump anymore. You have to do the work of creating a new pathway if you want to get to like the garden gate, for example. However, this like tiny flaw, but also necessity that we have in our brain is that our unconscious is constantly sweeping our environment for signs of danger. So that feeling you get when you're in a dark alley of like, I don't think I'm really safe here, or that moment you know something is just wrong, or any way that we perceive a mountain lion or a bear chasing us, it all activates the same physiological response that we want to fight, leave the scene, we stop dead in our tracks, or we do whatever it takes to like mitigate that risk, right? Fight, flight, freeze, bomb. So anytime we do something new or anytime we do something different, our safety system kicks in to tell us that what you're doing isn't safe, even if in the long run, it's going to be so much better for you. So we naturally revert into these patterns of self-sabotage that are ironically designed to keep us safe. So when we can get clear on like, I don't know, for example, what do you know what your go-to weapon of self-sabotage is?
I was just like thinking as you're speaking, I would say I can suffer from perfectionism more so than the others.
Yeah. Does perfectionism ever turn into procrastination for you? Like, I have to be so perfect. Yeah. That's mine as well. It's like, I have to do it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And since that takes a lot of work, I'm going to avoid doing it for as long as possible. Right.
Yeah.
So we have these little methods of self-sabotage that we use to prevent us from doing something new or prevent us from doing something different. So now we have this like clusterfuck of inner struggle, right? Mm-hmm. We don't like the way we've been doing it. We want to do it a new way. And every time we do it a new way, we are running up against ourselves because we're trying to protect ourselves from harm, even though you and I both know that getting a salary raise is not harmful. Getting out of a bad relationship is not harmful. It just it's perceived as danger. So when we can have that level of self-awareness, it's like, no, I know exactly how I respond in times of stress or challenge, then we can start to, we get a sense of like what purpose that pattern of behavior serves. When we get a sense of what purpose it serves and what belief is coming up, then we can look at the belief, try to change that in a way that's aligned with our value system, and then course correct the pattern of behavior. All of that requires rewiring your pathways, rewiring your brain, but really it's creating a new level of safety and understanding that what you're inherently doing to stop you from doing something new is not really helping you. It's actually hurting you. Once we can get all of those factors coming together, that's how we start to change a behavior. But that's also why behavior change is so hard because that's so many things going on at once. Mm-hmm. And then you got to not only have the awareness, but then put it into practice and keep teaching yourself that it is safe for you to make a mistake. It is safe for you to get it done and have it not be perfect. That's a muscle you also have to flex to teach your unconscious safety system that like you're cool to hide here, right? It's such a process, and it's a powerful and invaluable level of self-awareness when you can understand what's happening kind of behind the scenes.
I think too, it doesn't end. I think that potentially is why people get deterred by this work is, well, I can have tendencies of people pleasing. Let's say a people pleaser they know they're a people pleaser. People who say they're people pleasers, they're fully aware they're people pleasers.
100%.
Like they know it. But then it's also like this concept of like not wanting to hurt other people. Maybe I'm not really good at putting boundaries with other people. I don't want to like go against the grain of maybe what my parents wanted me to do versus what my husband wants me to do or my girlfriend wants me to do or whatever the case might be. And so people also get stuck in this suck fest of like, well, I didn't get it right now. I'm never going to get it right. So like, I'm not going to even try. Right. I think that self-sabotage is always going to be an evolving process, just like inner growth work, just like evolving your business, just like evolving your relationship with your husband or your partner, or your children or your mom or your dad or your grandparent, like whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
So for people who are multiple of the P's, right? We have perfectionism,
and procrastination,
people pleasing, and
performance anxiety. So it's like you get through everything and you're like, oh my God, I did it. I am about to speak to an NFL team. And then all of a sudden you're like, I can't do it. You kind of choke at the last minute. You see that actually a lot in athletes where it's like they've worked their whole life and then you come down to that moment and it's like their mojo is totally gone. Or, you know, you book a big client that you are clearly an expert, you know what you're doing, even your marketing and position is on point, and you've like landed this huge client, and all of a sudden you're like, I don't have any words, I have no vocabulary, I forget how to do this. It's that performance anxiety that it's like, oh, you thought you were good enough to be here, let me just remind you that you're not, that all those limiting stories and beliefs are still true. So that's a rough one.
And I think too, people just need to be so aware that you're smarter than your brain. Like your brain wants to conserve energy, avoid pain, and seek pleasure.
Yes.
So if you know that those three components are just how you're wired, then the rewiring actually is hard. It's challenging.
Yes.
But it's also extremely rewarding.
It is. Yeah.
I love it. So I saw you speak. I didn't see you personally. I saw you on Instagram speak at the Becoming Her in the convention, and you shared a wild statistic about Canadian women and finances. And I really want you to share this with our audience because some people may never have heard this. And I think that conversationally, we need to have more language and awareness on changing our relationship with our finances as women and what we believe we're worthy of calling into our lives from a financially safe feeling perspective. So please share this.
100%. So for context, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of women being allowed to have a credit card or a mortgage in their name without permission from a man. So let's just digest that for a second.
Yeah.
50 years. So the statistic that is almost more shocking than that is that only 3% of working Canadian women will make six figures. And the reason that is so staggering is that like 100K is just not enough money to live. You know, like I believe it costs about 80K to live reasonably. So it's not hand to mouth. You're not stressing out all the time, but 80K for one person to have a decent life. If 97% of working Canadian women are making not that, the effect that finances and income have on your mental health it's mind blowing. Mm-hmm. Like money is one of the single greatest stressors in our lives, because I don't know if you've noticed, life has become very expensive recently and doesn't really show any sign of stopping. Mm-hmm. Life is becoming more expensive and we're not making any more money and we're not making enough money. And so it's this like constant battle internally and mentally to be like, well, I can't talk about money. Like I must be the only one struggling here. so many people don't feel worthy of making it. 100K seems totally out of reach. It's like this mecca six-figure number. It's like, I'll never hit that. There's so much to unpack there just to keep up with a basic standard of living.
Mm-hmm. When I watched that video for the first time, I think I watched it like three or four times because it's shocking.
Isn't it?
It's shocking. And although, right, that statistic is saying that, yes, 97% of women are making less than 100K a year, or maybe they're not working and they're being nurturer for the family.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But then it also comes full circle of, if you're working, you still might actually never receive the opportunity to make 100K a year, which does sound like a lot probably to some people. But when you, like you said, break down the cost of living in Canada, and I know it's very similar to like this in the United States as well. Mm-hmm. We just took a trip to Vegas, my husband and I, and we were there for 4 days and we were astounded at the cost. And of course it's Vegas, but it's still just a place in the world, like for real, at what it costs just to go on that little 4-day vacation. And so it kind of breaks my heart. But how do you coach women? Because I know this concept of money and this topic of money is something that we need to talk about more, because we do feel alone a little bit. And if you're a woman who makes a little bit more money than average, you also don't really want to like flash it around because, I can really offend somebody and I don't want to like be too loud or too big.
Exactly.
Like that's a thing too.
Yes.
So how can we learn when it comes to feeling financially safe? Like what are the steps that you teach your clients on? What have you had to learn through your process of building your business to a six-figure business and all of the stuff that you need to unpack with that?
Well, interestingly, I had a program that was just for female entrepreneurs who wanted to make six figures, because being self-employed, mapping out basically 10K months is very doable. Mm-hmm. And I could not sell that for the life of me because it seemed, either wasn't enough money for people to make or they were not interested and it just didn't sell. So in full transparency, I stopped offering it because I was speaking to a void. So really where my specialty and like genius zone kicks in is for women who are making, you know, seven figures, and it still doesn't feel like enough. Mm-hmm. Again, we know from the data that even multiple six and seven figure earners, only 25% of them report feeling safe and secure in their money. There was a millionaire study done a number of years ago in which they asked people, like self-made millionaires, when did you first feel rich? And each of them was like, I don't feel rich. You know, I don't have a private jet, or I do have a private jet, but have you seen my friend's private jet? Or yeah, I have a great private jet, but you know, my friends have like three private jets and a yacht. People don't feel safe and secure with their finances because they don't know how to define what enough feels like for them. So the work that I do with people, men, women, at every level, is really getting a crystal clear sense of what would enough feel like for you. And once you know what enough feels like, then we can create an action plan, as well as looking at all the blind spots, self-sabotage, et cetera, in creating a life that feels just right for you.
So if people are listening and maybe they haven't sat down and done this practice of developing a sensation of enoughness, because behind this, Lise, correct me, is we're chasing a feeling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that feeling the same for everybody or different?
Totally different. The great thing about focusing on, like, let's say somebody's like, well, I will feel enough when I have this much money in the bank, or I will feel enough when I can take my kids to Disney. That is such an external material goal that by the time you realize that or achieve it, your brain has already set its sights on something else. So you keep getting stuck in this cycle of like, do achieve, repeat. And that's when you literally never feel like it's enough because you're constantly looking at the next thing. If instead we turn our attention to what does enough feel like, then we can get really clear on like, you know, for me, enough feels like freedom. It feels like having time. It feels like the ability to say yes or no. It feels like being able to go on a summer vacation and ultimately a winter vacation, which would be like the dream enough situation. Mm-hmm. You get clear on the feeling that you want to have. Peace, calm, togetherness, presence, whatever it is. You can start cultivating that feeling of peace, calm, togetherness, freedom in micro doses for yourself right now. So then again, neurologically, or from this kind of physiological perspective, you can tap into that feeling right now. So you're letting yourself experience what enough feels like. And that starts to create its own like fuel source that I know what enough feels like. It's safe for me to pursue that at a bigger level if that's what feels good. I will never forget the client that I had who's, you know, she's got an MBA, she's head of HR at a massive global media firm. And what dreaming big looked like for her is the same thing as what enough felt like for her, which was to take time off and weed her garden. Mm-hmm. That's all she wanted. But that didn't feel, even her version of enough didn't feel like enough. Because she felt so much external pressure to like, you got to take the kids to Italy and we got to do this. And we got, she's like, I literally just want to be in my garden weeding. And that was a huge thing that we worked on, was to give her permission to let that be enough for her. Right. So it's different for each person, but they're very human feelings. We just have to identify what that feeling is for you and then create a game plan of what gives you permission to actually dwell in that feeling.
So these feelings obviously are not just intellectual, they are a visceral sensation of that feeling, visualizing that sensation of what enoughness would feel like and actually feeling it viscerally in the body.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then you said micro dosing this into your regular life. So how does, if a person is like, okay, I'm ready to just kind of identify this feeling. I want to be willing to accept more into my vortex or this sensation of enoughness. How do we start to micro dose those concepts and those feelings into a regular person's day in life?
So I'm going to use a personal example just because it's top of mind. I love being at cottages. Okay. Like cottage feels like the ultimate luxury for me because you're living your life outside, but it feels very bougie. You still have an espresso maker in there with you. And so like, that's kind of epitomized by being away, somehow being near water and like sitting by the campfire. Well, if that's not in my budget right now, or in my reality to own a cottage or even to get away to a cottage, I can build a fire in my backyard. I can sit out there with my husband and have coffee. I can like get him to bring his guitar outside, string some bistro lights up. And all of a sudden I've created this feeling of togetherness, closeness, being in the woods, spending time with my family around a fire. And it's like, I faked it. So I create this like micro dose of what I want. But even if the reality isn't fully the expression of what I want, I've created a version of it because I've tapped into that feeling that I want to experience in that moment. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's like acting as if.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in a really responsible way. Because sometimes when we act as, and like, oh my God, guilty as charged. But sometimes we act as if, and it's like, I acted as if I could afford that and I couldn't. Yeah. Like, and now what do I do? Right. Yeah.
You actually sabotaged it.
You actually. Exactly.
Totally. Oh my gosh. This is so good. You know, I know that we're kind of coming to the end of our conversation, but you know, are there any other life lessons that you want to share with the audience today?
I really think like, I'm just so passionate about this, that nothing will be good enough for you until you are good enough for you. And I think it really comes down to that. It's knowing your self-awareness. It's having self-worth. It's really getting clear on what enough feels like for you. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerhouse of a place to live your life from.
I love that so much. How can the audience connect with you and work with you?
So they can go to leisewilcox.com, which is LeiseWilcox. I'm on Instagram every day at leisewilcox, LinkedIn at leisewilcox. I have a YouTube channel. Guess what? Lise Wilcox.
Who everywhere.
Omni-channel, baby. You know, Instagram, LinkedIn, and my website are like the best ways to, best ways to connect.
Oh my gosh, you're so funny. Okay. We will leave all of Lisa's information in the show notes. Lise, thank you so much for your beautiful aura and your presence today. I've soaked it all up. I know our audience is going to soak it all up, and I appreciate you so much and the work that you're doing to empower women further.
It is totally my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening the whole way through on She Empowers the podcast. Make sure to subscribe anywhere you are listening to podcasts. And if you happen to have iTunes, would you do me a favor and leave a 5-star review of the show so more women can learn about what we are doing over here? You can also copy this link and share it on your social media and tag me at sheempowers.co. That is the way we get these beautiful messages out to more and more souls around the world. Thank you so much for being a part of the She Empowers community. Until next time, go lead with love and joy.